school definition that we're working with these days.
Yeah.
It's not my path, and it's not going to be the path for my son or daughter, but you know, that's okay.
Oh, you might have just done yourself in there, Slav. You jinxed yourself, bud.
Oh, no. You're going to have 1,000 sock puppet Twitter accounts coming
from the there. Oh, God. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with being trans. My sister's non-binary. Like, I don't really care about any of this, really. It's just like, I don't know. When it becomes public policy, it just freaks me out. I don't know. Like, all of this shit.
Yeah, and you should be able to have, like, open discussion over public policy regardless of what the content of that policy is.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's one of the basic things, the good things about liberalism that I think we ought to preserve. It's like, we can talk about this shit without being, you know, fearful of being called a bigot or whatever.
Right.
It's the public square kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we talked about this a little bit on the live stream, and I'll just keep it brief. I mean, like, they make up less than 1% of the population, so I don't really care about them in general. And I don't mean that as in I don't care if they die or whatever. I just don't care about. I just feel like the fact that they make up like 90% of political discourse doesn't make any fucking sense.
And yeah,
it's pretty much just what I tell people. I mean, all the trans rights people, when they get on me and call me transphobic and say all this shit, I'm like, yo, I don't care. I don't care. And I mean,
yeah,
I don't know. That's why the Tulsi thing or the anti-trans stuff, like, I'm just like, shit, man, I don't like women's sports. I don't watch that shit. So, yeah. I mean, whatever they do there, fuck it. I mean, it's not my concern. But I mean, I get why you guys care about it. Like, I get it. I mean, it makes sense to me.
I mean, it's more often than not just used as a way to discursively bludgeon people. Like, honestly, absolutely. Like, yes. they talk about the trans death rate, and it's 40 people died last year, which is, yeah, you know, a tragedy, but also it's significantly lower than the death rate of the general population. So if anything, being trans makes you safer than being cis. And like, I don't know, like, yeah, I think, you know, transphobia ought to be, you know, fought where it's tangible and it affects people's lives. But if you use it the way it's used now, I don't take that seriously, because like, it's just a way to silence people and, you know, keep people down in a sense.
Yeah, I mean,
it's to get me kicked out of my fucking Denny's, you know. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, we just like,
really, goddamn it.
You know, we just shouldn't be like putting people down for immutable characteristics, and if somebody just like, genuinely. So I'm at Slaboid T.
Alright, this is Shit Spouter 37.
This is Black.com Pilled.
This is the Fed Post.
We just shouldn't be like putting people down for immutable characteristics, and if somebody just like genuinely all their life has felt this way and everything, that isn't a meaningful thing to waste a bunch of time on, to just like to hate on people and try to convince them that their feelings aren't actually their feelings and shit like that. It's absurd, right? Yeah, so like racism, transphobia, bigotry generally is not a good thing, right? But I mean, like we were talking about on the stream again, like I had mentioned, like all of this stuff, all this tail chasing, needing to give, you know, 1,000 asterisks about like, well, you know, just to be clear, I don't hate them. I'm not a horrible bigot. It's like, that's fucking insane that we even need to say that shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's built into it, and it's intentional. And it's just like the same fucking shit about being like pro-life. Oh, you must be anti-life, or pro-choice. You must be anti-choice. Shit like that. It's like, I God damn it. I don't want to run around the stupid fucking maze that they laid out in the words that they chose.
Yeah, we're non-binary. We're non-binary. We don't play that shit.
All right, we're good to go. Bucket. I'm good.
Okay, sweet.
Nice.
CRK, right. you might just want to go ahead and yak at this point.
Yeah, I got the
technology retard.
No, I am too.
Yeah, no, I was just saying my bad, because I'm like, you know, I got into character as a Brooklyn podcaster, and I did coke last night and fucking.
Yo, let's go.
I'm fucking sloshed right
God
now.
God damn it! I wanted to see that. So, yeah, I wanted to hear
that's
shit.
My bad.
CRK said, "Goddamn cocaine, ethylene."
All right.
Yeah, I actually don't like coke.
I'm I'm good to go. I'm ready to rock.
Coke fucking sucks. Right, dude.
Yeah, we should Coke sucks.
It's like expensive coffee.
I prefer coffee. Or like you drink one or two of those Bang energy drinks and you're just like on another
dude. Planet. Yeah, those make my heart race like a motherfucker.
Yeah, they can't be good for you. They can't be.
Oh, for sure, for sure. Yeah, I'll be honest. I don't miss hangovers at all.
Yeah, I keep thinking about how you're like straight. I'm like, fuck, Slav. I need to take the Slav pill.
I mean, to be honest, I'm still like completely addicted.
I'm not straight edge, but I don't drink. Like I was a dope fiend for most of my 20s, so I'm not sober. I just could never commit to sobriety, but I don't do drugs or drink like I used to. But I enjoy like the occasional MDMA or ketamine and shit like that.
Love K. Oh,
I like alcohol and weed. I'm very much a virgin. I'm not.
Yeah, but you're so young. Like you're going to get a fat line of ketamine one of these days and you're going to be like, you're going to be, I can see you becoming the biggest fucking K-head. You'll be coming on the show. You'll be like, what's up, Adam? I'm in the fucking K-hole right now.
Yeah, Adam just outed me as a fucking 19-year-old. He grooms me, guys. He fucking grooms me.
Goddamn right.
Hey, Zoomer solidarity.
I never understood the hype about
ketamine in the first place. I mean, again, it's like it's just like how Coke is like coffee, right? It's just
ketamine is a whole other beast, dude.
Well, I know it's not like Coke in that way, but it's just kind of like the flip side. It's like, okay, I feel like a little dulled.
Oh, okay. So ketamine very much depends on your dosage. If you do a little bit, yeah, it'll give you like a relaxing quality. But if you do a fat fucking line,
dissociated,
it's a beautiful.
It's an intellectual drug.
Yeah, it's an intellectual drug. Like I have my best. Like I've taken it and then, you know, I've come up, you know, I've taken notes for things that I was going to write later and shit. It's a psychedelic experience with much less of room for things to go totally wrong and like for terror and like uncomfortable self-examination. It's like a very peaceful psychedelic experience.
Sounds pretty gay.
It makes your legs feel like Bugs Bunny.
Yeah, totally.
We should get you guys your intros in. You guys can drop your name, your handle, and all that.
So I'm the perpetual self optimizer, and my Twitter at is _ self optimizer.
Yes, hey. I am Adam Lehrer. I'm a writer and an artist, and the co-host of System of Systems. My screen name is at Adam Lehrer.
Facts, and this is the second hour, so if you want to hear the first one, go over to their pod. You can hear the first one. We did a bunch of transphobia, and that's, you know, all the good stuff. So you can listen to that.
Yeah, hitting all the highlights, you know?
Yeah. And now we're about to do another hour of transphobia. There's so much more to talk about. No, we should talk about some other shit. You had a couple of topics, right, Ben? That we didn't get to yet that we should cover.
Yeah. So I was just gonna kind of mention this tweet I made actually like an hour before we started recording, which was like, here, I'll just read it. All right. So some guy, I'm not gonna name any names because I don't want beef, but you know, he said, you know, small business owners are literally PMC, and then he said they own the means of production and extract wealth from the labor of their employees. Why would anyone who works for a living want to align with them? And I was just like, all right, bro, I guess I'd rather see the whole country turn into a parking lot, concrete strip malls all over the place, with the same 7 monopoly chain stores inside. And like, they're not PMC, they're petite bourgeoisie. Sorry to get, you know, fucking anal about the Marxist categorizations, but they're not PMC at all. They literally, I mean, like, the whole kind of small business discourse, to me, kind of shows where the left is weakest in a sense, because at the end of the day, I do think, you know, many kind of working class people do have a genuine kind of desire for kind of social mobility in a sense, and up to a lot of people that manifests in being able to own property and operate property. Yeah. And this is not to say that I think everybody should become like a small business tyrant. And this is not to say that I think like there's something like small business owners are beyond critique or criticism, because by all means, no fucking way. Like I've worked for some terrible fucking small businesses.
Yeah.
But among the most miserable people I've ever met.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think genuinely speaking, like we should be able, like, at least people who are kind of on the dissident left or who have kind of left the left in a sense, like, we should understand that, like, I think like owning property unto itself is not a bad thing. And I think being able to be self-sufficient, you know, as like a human being yes. outside of the market and the state is a really important thing. And I've been reading up on the distributists, and this is one of their big things, that property should be as widely distributed as possible so that it doesn't kind of aggregate in the hands of a couple, you know, monopoly capitalists. And I think there's something to that. I mean, in the sense of like just envisioning what a future society should look like, what a better society should look like, I think we should have, you know, people's desire in mind, people's desire for being able to be self-sufficient, for being able to know how to grow their own food, for being able to, you know, like have a little farm if they want to, but also like for being able to own like a little bit of property, because at the end of the day, that's where you can raise a family. Yeah. That's where your home is.
Well, that's
you're not up to like the whims of the market. You're not up to changing renting costs and shit. Like, that's just my thing. That's what I'm kind of looking into nowadays. Like, just alternate ways to organize society that are not just like state bureaucracy or just market totalitarianism. I don't know.
Yeah, home production. Go on.
That's why I like the choice line from the whole Great Reset conspiracy theory is people own nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
But they're happy, you know, because, I mean, we're at a very unique point in political economic history, because I think there is a valid critique of small business owners, like the family value sort of thing that they used to enslave workers. But we are there's rapid shifts happening in our political economy. One of those main shifts is that the proletariat probably shares more material interests with like petty bourgeois small business owning millionaires than they do like broke PMCs who are out there specifically to manufacture ideology.
And elite finance capitalists too. I mean, I saw a statistic that 48% of small businesses in this country are facing kind of an imminent shutdown because they simply can't afford to recoup their bills. And that's a fucking scary ass statistic, because if you actually look at like the kind of power centers, it's going to be much less decentralized in a sense. It's going to be much less spread out, and it's going to be concentrated increasingly in the hands of the richest people in our society. And that fucking freaks me out.
They want us to get used to a life in which we have nothing. Like, this is the whole Zygmunt Bauman liquid modernity thing. They want us to really like get used to a life where there's no commitment, loyalty, values, family, anything that traditionally throughout history regular people would grasp onto to give their life some centrality or some meaning. And that serves us, like, think of even it's in everything. Like, falling in love with somebody and then committing to that person is considered like a weakness by a lot of people in our two generations. Like, they think to just go online and flip through humans and then fuck whoever once and then never actually give yourself over to something that would require a long-term commitment. That is like a metaphor for how we engage. They don't want people to strive for ownership of their own lives. They don't want people to have careers. They want us to have temp gigs. Like, this is part of what, this is an ideology that is being set up in construction and constructed to set us up for like what is going to be a post neoliberal era. Like, we're entering something new right now where the atomization is so totalizing.
Yeah, it's neo-feudalism is what it is.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Yeah.
They want everyone to be like unrooted, untethered to anybody through any social relations, untethered to production, untethered to anything, their family, their community. And like, you can see this sick shit. Like, I've been watching some Christmas movies because I'm Christmas pilled right now.
Oh, yeah.
And like, most of the fucking Christmas movies you see are about like escaping your family at Christmas or like how horrible it is that your family's in town for Christmas or that you're going home for Christmas. It's all about like people like I just watched Christmas with the Cranks last night with like Tim Allen and shit. And like, they opt to like go on a cruise instead of going out, instead of going like having the big family Christmas and the communal Christmas thing. And it's like, that's like what all these people want in game. Yeah. Like, and they're seeding the seeds of it like in our media.
No, yeah, I mean if you
the small business thing was already going away. I mean, this is the thing. It's like, even before COVID, small businesses were getting murked by fucking Walmart and e-commerce, and they were already chewing that shit up for like the longest. So like, now that all this happened, this great restructuring is happening, it's like it's just accelerated what was already happening. It's
right. Like, and this is not to say that I think like we should necessarily be like, oh, you know, small businesses are the epitome of good economic relations, because there is a contradiction between worker and owner. But at the end of the day, we are going to need to enter into a kind of pragmatic kind of joint partnership with these people if we want an actual kind of populist economic policy, because they're getting fucked over by the monopoly capitalists as much as the average worker is. And I think we do genuinely need to have a kind of class collaboration in a sense, like not in a fascist way, you know, but like just in a very fundamental way, like just in the fundamental sense of being like, yeah, we have some mutual interests. I think, you know, these people would be benefited by kind of single payer healthcare, distributed programs and shit. And like, you know, this is not to say that we should marry ourselves to like the idea of small businesses as a final solution.
If you're one of these lefties though, that's like worried about like corporations, right? Which you should be. If you're worried about, I had a point, but I completely lost it. Adam, what were you just saying previous to this?
Well, I tweeted something last night, and it was like it was kind of a joke, but I was also kind of serious, is that, you know, I would square my political ideology somewhere between like a left comm analysis and I don't fucking know anymore, because I think what's happening is that a lot of like the shifts are happening so quick that I think a left comm analysis is quite strong, but everything is so rapid now that all these sort of historical political ideologies, theories, analyses, whatever, don't have any kind of totalizing explanatory power. Right. So I think the best way to respond to that is to use what you know to an extent, but to not lean on any orthodoxies. Because that guy arguing with Ben was leaning into an orthodoxy that ultimately just made him sound like an idealist retard.
I remembered my point now, which was you were going on talking about the petite bourgeois and how we do have at least tangentially aligned interests with them, right? Like they're lower down the totem pole as far as global capital accumulation goes. And so if you're one of these lefties that's concerned about quote unquote stopping fascism and everything, you should be also concerned in targeting making a coalition that will speak to, not align with, but speak to and attract the petite bourgeois as an alliance. Yeah. Because they're the main pieces of the puzzle that are going to switch to quote unquote fascism traditionally, right? Sure. So you should be trying to make a program that can get those people obviously what he said is correct. Like small business owners own the means of production. Petite bourgeois have inherent contradiction with the interests of the workers at that level. But the thing is, like, instead of being like, oh, fuck small businesses, we should understand that, like, we need to use small businesses as a transitory plan, right? Like, small local businesses and production locally is usually more easily leveraged. Like, the community can usually have a little bit more say over it. It's usually more held accountable or held accountable more easily to employees of that company. Even if it's not, the community often can come in and say things. So, like, if we want to make a real transition to a new world, like with new production models and stuff, what we need to do and what would have to happen is that we'd have to subsidize local business production, local production and home production, move away from corporate production and bust up the monopolies. Yep. And then we would also work on focusing at a local level on transitioning those businesses that are small boss and owner businesses into worker-owned businesses and as well as community-owned businesses. And that would be the way forward. And that's the transitory path that people just don't see.
That's great. Yeah, that's a great kind of path forward in a sense, because like a lot of the time, I think when people critique small businesses, they don't realize what the power relations actually are. Because at the end of the day, if you are going to form this narrative that small businesses are kind of uniquely fascistic and uniquely evil, at the end of the day, you're only serving the interests of big monopoly capital. There's no workers movement right now that's challenging kind of concentration of wealth, whether it be on the small business owners level, which is probably in the low millions, or the billionaires level, which is in the hundreds of billions and sometimes the trillions. So like, you have to understand what's actually going on. And like, people who just rail against small businesses all day, like, oh, I had a terrible boss one time. It's like, yeah, okay, that fucking sucks, dude. But like, what function are you actually serving? Because Jeff Bezos loves to hear you say that, because he's like, you know, I'm going to expand my market share. I'm going to destroy local bonds and local kind of community formations. And I'm going to just stick my, you know, big old capitalist tentacles into every single community in this country and flatten it, just turn it all into the same shit. And that
sense.
Yeah, man, that prospect just like,
small business owners don't have the fucking capital to hire literal Pinkertons to destroy the lives of their workers, spy on them outside the workplace. So, like, I mean, I just don't know how people, like, small business owners are getting fucked throughout this pandemic as hard as anyone else. Meanwhile, like, the wealth is concentrating so high at the top that even, like, you can have $10 million in the bank and be precarious right now just because you're still reliant on labor, whereas the billionaire class is all sign value and ephemeral fucking finance shit.
Yeah.
Right. I hear the arguments I see is basically like three different roads, right? It's like, the relationship between boss and worker is less confused in a corporate setting because you're not as close, right? And so there's less the mistake that there's buddy buddy. Mm. Okay. Labor is less chopped up into different factions because we're all under more or less like one umbrella or so. And then I guess, for lack of a better word, due to just like the corporate bureaucracy, there's less of a chance of like your boss taking advantage of you in like an illegal way, which is funny because that's basically just like a Warren critique. I mean, that's just anti-corruption. I don't really have a lot of faith in corporate bureaucracy, to be completely honest. I also think that there's some dissonance between thinking that corporate bureaucracy is going to protect you, but also that corporate bureaucracy isn't also going to completely neuter your argument about how labor will be easier to organize if everyone's consolidated. You really think that the bureaucracy is going to work on one hand but not the other?
Exactly.
Like, it's a fucking joke. And I was mentioning earlier, I've worked for two separate companies where, you know, it's funny, I realized this year I've worked for like a weird amount of businesses that have closed within like a year of hiring me. So like, if any business owners are listening, I guess like hiring me is like a kiss of death. Don't do it. But I've worked for two different companies that were in dire straits. And in that time, one of them, I straight up didn't receive like my last paycheck. Just shady shit has happened, right? Yeah. I have personal experience with that, and that totally was made possible. What's the wording I'm looking for here? That probably wouldn't have happened if I was working for the Whole Foods of the world or some, you know, Walmart or something like that. I completely accept that. This is like kind of like a really simple point I'm about to make, though. But like punching the clock and doing the meat grinder of a giant mega business like the ones that I've had the displeasure of working for a couple of times in my life genuinely is worse than the danger that comes a little bit more of the Wild West by comparison of a small business.
Exactly. And the argument that those people make is that, oh, if we ensure that the corporate kind of monopoly conglomerates kind of suck up all the kind of market shares, then we can just nationalize them and our work is cut out for us. It's like, how the fuck are you going to do that, man? Like, leftists make this argument as if the state has like any oversight and any power whatsoever to do that right now. It's like, what the fuck?
The immediate argument is that, like, oh, well, these corporations, like, with their bureaucracy and with their larger profit shares, have the ability to like provide, you know, benefits and stuff that small businesses can't provide. But like at that point in time, like what you should be looking at is this is like, that's the wrong argument, is small businesses versus business. The argument should be, why did we live in a state where the welfare state's been completely like cut off to where we have to rely on our jobs to get health care and get like general services and like benefits? And also why do we live in an economy that subsidizes corporations in order to let them provide that type of shit rather than subsidizing local and small business production?
Absolutely. That was actually the argument that slave owners made in the Civil War, the Mudsill argument, that, oh, the slave, the owner of the slave, they care more for the slaves because they're interested in their entire well-being. And not to make a crass historical comparison here, but Abraham Lincoln just countered that in the sense, and of course, Abraham Lincoln was defending the North's industrialism, right? This like terrible capitalist development. development that would end up being our contemporary system now. But he just said, like, oh, you know, people don't enter into that relationship voluntarily and willingly. They're literally drafted without any consent whatsoever. So at the very least, like, whatever, the market provides you with some voluntary element. Obviously, both systems are totally fucked. But that kind of argument that, oh, the corporation can provide more for the worker because they have a more kind of centralized and consolidated power structure is bullshit to me, because, like, that's the same argument that the slave owners were making in the South at the time of the Civil War. It's insane.
It's even less consent. And, like, and fucking again, like, as far as, like, the benefits and everything, like, oh, yeah, no, the army of lawyers and the bureaucracy that's going to make it so that you don't get taken advantage of by corrupt actors is also totally just going to be completely indifferent to your demands as workers, right? That tool, that centralized tool, isn't going to be used against you, you fucking retards. Like, give me
plus all that like private life invasive shit you get at corp. Like, I would never personally work a job where I had to, like, pass a drug test. I think it's an absurd breach of, like, someone's personal life. And the only times I've ever been asked to take a drug test is when I was signing on to work for a really big company. But if I'm, like, at a fucking tiny little business in wherever, they still have, I mean, maybe it's faux or whatever, but there's still some delineation between your work life and your private life.
I've actually experienced a bit of the opposite. Like, working in a small business where they promote the, like, I run my business like a family kind of shit, where it's like, they expect you to be as fully invested in the business as a worker as they are as the owner of the business. Yeah. And then they want you to do shit outside of work hours. There's less employees, so they can make it like a thing of, like, well, you need to cover for so-and-so today because she has to go to the hospital and shit like this type of stuff, where it's more, it's leeches more into your personal life as far as time and labor goes and less into privacy. Like, it's privacy.
You're right. I'll see that point. Like,
no, I totally agree with that. I mean, that goes to show the perverted logic of the kind of capitalist small business, because they are using something that I think is very good and wholesome in a sense, like this kind of family values notion, that the notion that, like, you do have a commitment to the place you work, but at the end of the day, you have no say over what wages you're getting, so it doesn't really mean anything. But I do think, like, if things were more cooperatively run on a local level, and I think that any kind of populist movement should strive for that, a more kind of localist focus, a more kind of, like, development of local communities, local production, not relying on outsourcing of labor, not relying on kind of imports of products and stuff, and obviously imports of labor too. I don't know, like,
and household production.
Yeah, exactly, household production and just agrarian shit. I don't know, man.
Community in a sense is the true enemy of capital, because capital necessitates individuals in competition with one another, clawing at each other like rabid fucking animals to get higher on the food chain. But as long as people still have a sense of collectivity, and that comes in many forms, family, community, whatever the fuck production you're part as well. Of,
yeah,
production, yeah. I mean, all that shit, all the microcosms of community that come together to form a sense of togetherness is the last line of defense between a society and full atomization misery. Yeah.
I just did a quick aside, the plug real quick, and then I'll let CRK take this over. I just did a quick episode with the guys over at Rare Candy, and it was entirely about community building as well as like local home food production and production as well. So check that out over at Rare Candy Podcast when you get
a chance. I like those guys a lot.
No, I was just thinking, like the time I've been in, like, in Africa, I can't say which place specifically, but, like, you know, there's basically a vibe of, like, if your car breaks down or something, like, people will yell at other people, like, what are you doing sitting watching, like, come fucking help. You know what I mean? It's like that type of vibe. There's like an intrinsic, like, of course I'd help. Like, here, good luck with that shit. Like, good luck with that in fucking, at least in, like, New York or, like, somewhere like that. Like, that's not fucking happening. No one gives a fuck. So it's like, yeah, that community thing is, yeah, you're right. It's a very, it's a psycho politics. But that's the other thing I wanted to ask you guys about, because I don't know if this is, maybe this has just been on my mind a lot. This one, like, bugging me, but, like, this mutual aid thing. It's kind of like, I guess, the flip side of this, right? Because it's like, you know, it's what the way I see it, and like what AOC has been pushing of all this stuff is like charity politics. And it's like some libertarian dude was in like was who follows me was like replying to something. He's like, it's very weird watching these leftists, like these socialists, talk about mutual aid, because that was like a libertarian thing. Like, yeah, I thought that was
anarcho bullshit.
Yeah, right.
So, libertarian.
Yeah, what do you guys make of that?
That's yeah.
And these people are libs.
They're yeah. total libs. And this is what kind of collective power turns into if you don't have state power as well. Because at the end of the day, the kind of anarchist argument, and I know because I used to be an anarchist, is that no, we need to, you know, grow our power without the state intrusion. We need to kind of build these alternative institutions. We need to form workers, syndicates, cooperatives, etc., etc. And it's all utopia, because at the end of the day, the state has a monopoly on violence and force.
Yeah.
And they're going to exercise that monopoly if you genuinely threaten them and the capitalist order. So like you do need, I'm sorry to be an electoralist, but you do need to have some kind of electoral sway over things in order for any kind of genuine mutual aid, a communitarian mutual aid, to work. I don't know. That's my take.
It's not even to mention the fact that most of these like quote unquote mutual aid networks that AOC and the like talk about are actually just nonprofit and NGOs that are going to be carving out a new sector. And those are subsidized by the fucking government. Like,
I think this is an interesting place to go, because Ben and I actually became friends online, and then he joined the show in our... We were both kind of like mutually just like shitting on an anarchist online. I don't know if you remember that, Ben, but that's how we first started interacting. And, you know, mutual aid is still built on a very flimsy set of idealistic values that misunderstands power and wants to imbue sort of like innate moral clarity into its subjects without looking at power dynamics and class dynamics. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this, like, I still think Du Bois' critique of Bakunin and anarchism is still the best way to look at any of this stuff, because they really believe that they can abolish the state and then just let everybody chill. But that's totally like, you know, that's like totally just like an idealistic viewpoint.
Utopian.
That humans
bullshit.
Are innately it's good. Yeah, it's yeah. utopian. And,
it's
and
kind
if
of
there's a- no, sorry, just to finish up the point. If there's no, like, the idea that politics will be destroyed or will be over just because of the bourgeois state has been abolished is fucking retarded. We're going to still need centralized power. It might be organized differently and empowered by the proletariat.
Working it for us.
Right. And that's why Marx still has so much like explanatory power, because he understood
and Lenin,
they understood that society is built on its structural conditions, not on the innate moral character of its subjects.
And I do think that kind of Kropotkin's notion of evolutionary kind of biology, his kind of repudiation of the vulgar kind of social Darwinist view that we're pure competitive subjects. He said, no, you know, we have a genuine kind of like kind of symbiotic side. We have a cooperative side that isn't solely competitive. And again, like, I think we can borrow from Kropotkin the valuable insights that he made without borrowing his transitionary ideas, which are totally utopian and totally bullshit. And like, at the end of the day, all of these people are either warmed over Kropotkinites or warmed over Proudhonists. And these ideologies haven't had any sway over material politics in two centuries. Like, they don't even, they're not relevant at all to working class movements now, and they haven't been relevant for a long time. So at the end of the day, this kind of attempt to resurrect mutual aid as a form of charity is bullshit. Because, dude, if you want to go to charity, just join a fucking church. Like, we said this on our episode with Sandra Solomon. She made this point. Like, you know, join a church or a mosque or something.
Start
That's
a community
like,
garden.
Yeah, exactly. Or start a community garden. Don't join like a leftoid organization where they're going to be handing out pamphlets with the bread and the soup.
This whole mutual aid strain and like anarchist strain, what it does is it just like mystifies the concept of collaboration and solidarity and puts it and posits it entirely at the ideological level, right? Like, oh, you are going to collaborate along the same lines with these people because you share allyship and this like mystical idea of solidarity because you feel their struggle, when the fucking fact of it is this, this, and that. No, humans are collaborative animals, and we're just fractals of the rest of the fucking planet because they all, everything collaborates down to microorganisms and everything. But we're collaborative on the fact that we have shared material interest, and that's where solidarity comes from. It comes from people acting on their shared material interest. They're acting in their own interest, and it's aligned with the interest of someone else. It's not about the fact that I think I feel bad for you, so I'm going to stand up for you type bullshit. Right. That's not how it works. Yeah, that's ideological. I mean,
and it goes back. It goes back to the fact that our social institutions do, literally. I mean, it's. I mean, in a sense, like Marx was very right in the sense that like our material conditions do force us to act in ways we wouldn't otherwise act if we were left in a vacuum. And it kind of discounts that kind of symbiotic side of human nature. And at the end of the day, all of this stuff, like all of this kind of talk of mutual aid and charity and whatnot, most of the time it's bourgeois mystification. It's psychopolitics. Mm-hmm. It's being like, oh, I see a homeless man there. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to help him with my dollars. It's paying it forward. It's the same kind of
that's socialism. Yeah. That's socialism.
I mean, well, that's why, like, you know, I think like online leftism or whatever provides some semblance of like an illusion of community.
Yes.
I mean, I know this for a fact because I've been in the art world for years now, and I've had four different instances of like people just like shitting on me for days on end for things that I've written or that I've said or for whatever, having white privilege. But it's a totally, and this is why like this is why leftism now is so complementary to neoliberal capitalism, because it's an unstable community. It's built on a sense of, it's like masochistic in the sense that you're getting like, you're deriving like jouissance or like excess pleasure from just like shitting on people who step out of orthodoxy. But at the same time, you're cowering in fear, but kind of getting off on that fear that rage might be directed at you. So it's community built on alienation itself.
Right. And it discounts the fact that real communities that share material interests are often physical and proximate. It's people living together and working together. It's
bonds.
It's not somebody you know over the internet with the same skin color as you. That's not a fucking community. Like,
you share material shit. You do shit for each other.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're your apartment blocks, your neighborhoods, your workplaces. Like, this shit is real. It's not neoliberal. It's proximate and physical and real. And this is kind of what we need to
having shared stakes.
Localism.
Yeah, baby. Woo.
Yeah, but you can't have it. You can't have an overly academic explanation of that, right? Like, what are you gonna do? What are you gonna do with all of these really verbose, overeducated, navel-gazing fuckheads with useless degrees if they can't like over explain to the fucking proles how cooperation
could
actually work?
No,
they get the wall. It's fucking stupid, man. It makes me think of, it's just the same fucking thing as just all of the just coming back around to libertarianism, of all the fucking libertarian fucks that would always be like, listen guys, America donates, you know, more to charity than any other place. We're a country that just wants to help each other out. And it's like, shut the fuck up.
Exactly. All the neocons, that's the thing. All the neocons would be like, well, you know, if you want to pass healthcare for all, why don't you just donate yourself? Why are you making me do it? Donate yourself. Do it yourself. Okay. And then they'd always be like, well, that's not a real long-term solution. Come on. Let's be real. Like, charity is not a long-term solution. And now the left is all charity politics.
Yep.
Very funny. Yep. Very funny. You know what I mean? It's almost like we're drifting right economically every fucking year.
Yeah.
And Reagan is just running the numbers up every fucking year.
Yeah. And I'll say this as someone that's worked with and in charities and NGOs in the past. These people are not going to help you. Like, these people, even if some of these people think that they are trying to help you, they're not, because they're wrongheaded in their approach. Because they're doing it from a bourgeois fucking standpoint. And that's where all of these like liberal like NGOs that come about that are like, oh, well, we're going to like change the world. No, these are middle class, upper middle class, downwardly mobile PMC, college educated liberals that are forming these fucking things to put band-aids over the gaping holes in capitalism and try to just cover the fact up and make themselves and all the people in their class feel better about their inherent exploitation of the working class.
It's laundering guilt. That's what it is. It's what all the woke shit is too. It's just laundering guilt. Well, I gave this dollar. I donated to this Twitch stream to stop troops using calling gay kids the F word or whatever. Like, I donated to that. So I, you know, my conscience clear.
It almost looks like intercity, like imperialism, if that makes any sense. Like, if you take imperialism, like it looks like on a global scale between nations, and you put it in a city and you do it between neighborhoods, what these NGOs do is they go into these poor neighborhoods, and these are people from rich neighborhoods and bourgeois backgrounds, and they go into these poor neighborhoods, they identify areas that need help, then they leech off the government to get funds to help the people in those regions. They use the resources of those fucking regions, and then they export that out. Like, for instance, urban farms. Like, I deal with urban farms all the time. These people go in and they get parks in local neighborhoods that are downtrodden, neighborhoods that need access to food, right? They grow all this food, and yet they do community share programs where instead they sell the food to people that live in fucking Capitol Hill. Right, they're not giving the food to the people here. They're using the land of the people here, and they're growing food on it, and then they fucking put it to the people that live in the inner
city. You're right. That's imperialist shit.
And at the same time, they're turning all of these underclass, underprivileged people into kind of servants of the DNC, because they say, look at our politics, look at our great political mission. It's pure patronage. They're like, we're going to give you something, but we expect something in return.
But
return, it's a fucking vote for, and it's also state support for their institutions. Like, I see this also echoed. That's a great point, COH. I see this echoed in the kind of way in which the kind of Heartland working class has been treated after the most recent election. Like, you see all of these rich libs being like, oh, I was considering donating, you know, money to people in rural Missouri, but I think I'm going to hold off on that because of all the Trump signs.
Absolutely. And what I was saying before, about why there's so many like reactionary or conservative writers that I think actually give me like a more coherent Marxist understanding of politics is, you know, I mean, Marx talked about this like in the 18th Brumaire of Louis Bonaparte, actually, how the problem with social democracy and all that shit is that it weakens the antagonism between capital and wage labor. So instead of brutally outlining the extreme inequality and contradictory nature of it all, it tries to alleviate those things and thus only reifies that brutal system in the process.
Right.
That's why I love like Nick Land. Like, even though there's tons of shit about someone like Nick Land that I disagree with, there's no way you can read Nick Land and come away like a centrist. Like, you know what I mean? Like he, that kind of, I think it's important to be brutally realistic about what all this shit means. And the thing that I hate about leftists the most is at their best, they're fucking harm reducers. Like, and I just have no tolerance for that shit.
It's funny you bring up Land, because like with what we were talking about, as far as like small business versus, you know, big corporations and everything, like, these are the same people that like probably like just like read one Vox article and think that accelerationism is like the ideology of like school shooters, but they're basically like pushing the exact same fucking logic. And like, you know, like there's a little bit of that just in Marx to begin with, right? I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of cognitive dissonance going on. As far as the fucking charity mutual aid thing goes, also, like, I'm looking at this like beef going on publicly on Twitter between like Jimmy Dore and AOC, and Jimmy Dore's kind of a clown. I usually don't pay much attention to him, but I mean, he's completely right here. She's waffling on Medicare for All, which, you know, I mean, if you're surprised by that, then I'm sorry, the tumor is inoperable at this point. But like, I mean, it's the same thing that's going on there. It's going on with the mutual aid thing, which is you guys are allowing her to fucking make herself cover so that she doesn't need to be on the hook for any of this shit, right? You didn't do shit for me, but I can't really say anything because I didn't go to the soup kitchen and do the work for the person that was below me. Shut the fuck up. God damn it.
No, it's insane. Like, I really do think, like, I mean, it's crazy to me how far AOC has gotten a pass from people who are ostensibly materialists for not literally doing nothing to advance material working class power. I mean, Jesus fucking Christ, man. Like, her entire political mode is literally a repudiation of any kind of understanding of power in this country. Like, I'm sorry, you need to use yourself as a literal fucking human shield for the fucking working class that you're ostensibly supposed to represent. If you are going to be a genuine kind of populist, you need to be putting roadblocks every single time. You're not supposed to be, you know, forging these, oh, you know, sweet political alliances and bonds with the establishment Democrats if you're ostensibly supposed to be an outsider populist. But of course she isn't. She's a fucking neoliberal Democrat operative from the get-go. So there's no value in what her position is at this point anyway. Like, maybe there was a tiny bit of promise at the beginning, but I've totally lost faith in that. Like, I don't know.
But she's an epic working class bartender.
She's Jenny from the block, bitches.
She made fucking shitty overpriced Moscow mules for 6 months.
This brand.
Dumb drink. And then, you know, that's it.
But the only people I hate more, the only people I hate more than AOC simps are the people who have started to recognize that she's trash, but they're like, well, you know, AOC's whack, but I kind of dig Ilhan Omar. It's like they're still holding on to the squad as some sort of hope for, like anyone who has any hope in any, like, the Democratic Party is a fucking hive mind. And there's, like, everyone who's, like, in the party, but also pantomiming dissent to an extent, are way more fucking dangerous than, like, the arch blue dog reactionaries like Joe Manchin. Like, I support Joe Manchin for president because he's just like, I hate all leftists. And honestly, that's much cooler to me.
We need a real anti-leftist candidate.
Manchin
for president.
K.W. Miller, baby. Let's go.
Yeah, I don't fuck with you unless you tell me that the Dems and the DNC are full of reptiles. If you don't say that, that's my I'm a one issue voter. That's it. I need to hear you.
See their scales. Say that,
if you say, oh, the Pelosi's mommy, if you say shit like that, then I can't do it. I need to hear that. Yeah. I need to hear the words.
Yeah.
That's my patronage. I don't need anything else. I just hear that.
The only thing that I'll give AOC and Ilhan Omar is that they're probably the two most fuckable politicians in American politics.
Bro. Tulsi's right there.
Tulsi, yeah. I wouldn't
mind AOC's titties in my face. I'm not going to lie.
She's got no ass, though. There's nothing
better. Yeah, no ass. It's like cardboard back
there. Yeah, but I mean, not everybody has to have both. Sometimes a good pair of tits is...
No, but if you're going to have one, you've got to have the ass, Adam. Like, come on, man.
Wow. Okay, Ben's got some standards over here. Let's just say that I've slept with women much less attractive than AOC.
Right. Well, this is a materialist podcast, so we care about the base, which is the legs and the ass.
Speak on it, CRA.
You need a strong foundation.
Yes, you need a strong foundation, a sturdy woman.
Yeah.
Foundation of politics.
You know, we were talking about the women's sports earlier, and I just thought it made me laugh for a second, because my late papa, who was like, you know, an 85-year-old small chubby Hungarian Jew, he loved the WNBA because he had an Amazon fetish.
Nice.
You're gonna out him like that,
doing a
call. Well, no, he was a great guy. But he loved like big tall girls, so he watched a lot of those fucking games.
Nice. I respect it. I wish they'd step on me. That's that's why. That's honestly, if I'm being real, that's why I don't care about this this trans women in sports thing. Because honestly, the better for me, because taller stature. You know, it feeds into but you know, I've said too much.
What's up, big guy? I'm going to step up.
Yeah, CRK is looking for those cue angles.
Exactly. You're interested in a strong woman.
Bro, if your girl can't bench you, what the fuck are you doing? Like, come on.
Facts. Like, damn, girl, I see you got them wide set shoulders.
The second my girlfriend came in with me, I'm breaking up with her.
Do you guys want to talk about Brandon Bernard as the last thing? I'm curious about everybody's thoughts on this.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I don't know anything about that, but I'll listen in and then I'll put my 2 cents in once I figure it out.
Yeah, I don't know what they said. Well,
Brandon Bernard was executed by the state.
Oh, right. You know,
they'd been trying to appeal his execution for a long fucking time. He was convicted of murdering a couple when he was 18. Now, I will admit here that my most like rad lib position is I just have like a kind of petty bouge morality, like a general repugnance towards the death penalty. Like, I'm aware that spending, you know, your whole life in prison can't be that much better, but just something about like executing people for punishment seems grotesque to me. But that said, there was like this whole, like all the BLM kind of leftists were like, how dare the state do this when Dylan Roof got a cheeseburger? But it's like, we don't know if Brandon Bernard was fed or not. And at the end of the day, they were both young men who committed atrocious crimes. Brandon Bernard got executed. Dylan Roof got 9 consecutive life sentences after taking a plea deal. So I'm just really fucking confused what they think the big disparity here is that is like the, like makes their point so well. Cause it seems to me like both cases demonstrate how carceral the state is.
Yeah, and I'd even argue that a life sentence is more cruel than actually being just murdered. Like, being in jail is like a fucking miserable thing. It's not, jail in America is not designed to be like a rehabilitation center or rehabilitative fucking program. It's designed to be strictly punitive, especially if you're on death row. So like living in jail until you're like 60, like with no human interaction outside of like a couple of like meals every now and again and some yard time, like I've like being in jail is like, it's not a human fucking experience at all. And like, I've been in jail for weeks before and like not anything like years at all, but like it's dehumanizing and it's like a fucking unhuman experience. And being there for life would be like, I personally would prefer to be murdered or I'd kill myself before I go to jail for life.
I think that the death penalty stuff is like, this is another perfect example of just like kind of libertarian neoliberal depoliticization project, in that it's the perfect example. It's the perfect issue to just hammer on potential dysfunctions of the state and how it operates. Like, well, what if the government, you know, makes a mistake in this way? These guys can't even do anything right, right? All these Keystone cops and everything, right? Well, philosophically, a life in prison is entirely more inhumane than just having them put you down. And yes, if you put anything within the purview of an institution, there's going to be examples where they fuck it up, right? Yeah.
But the discussion should be why does that happen and how can we solve it, rather than like, let's just not allow them to kill people ever. Like, it's like, why is it that the state is in a place where it can like have that overreach and have systems where they can like put someone behind bars for like non like violent crimes for X amount of years. Like, you have obviously to look at
if they find evidence that, like DNA evidence that overturns it, they can let you go if you got a life sentence. If you got the death penalty, there's no going back.
Yeah, there's no going back. I'm too much of a squeamish Catholic for this this discourse. I'm just fundamentally opposed to putting somebody to death prematurely in any case. But yeah, I totally see your arguments. I mean, the way the carceral state kind of operates now is totally fundamentally dehumanizing. And there's, I mean, it just, I don't know.
You
have to reform the whole state before you try to just do a fucking like, oh, no more killing people by the like.
Well, you guys are gonna hate me.
I don't know. I mean, I think we can do away with the death penalty before we like. I don't know. I think it's just fundamentally just wrong.
But you guys are gonna hate me here, but I'm gonna drop a little Foucault reference, because this is there's a lot of things I hate about Foucault, but he was right in his, you know, his book about criminal justice. He was definitely correct that there is something like, it's not exactly an evolution for the state to mystify its brutality to such an extent. At least the great monarchs had the good sense to just hang us and show us the full weight of their power. But I also wanted to, I mean, because Amy had a good tweet where she showed how MSNBC was spectacularizing the execution of Brandon Bernard right next to an article about how they were advocating for a female State Department. And I think this is just how the state missed, like, by creating a spectacle around one tragedy at home, like an execution by the state, and saying this is wrong and diverting all the attention there. It's a mechanism of abstracting the brutality that the state rots all over the globe.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, you can be upset that Brandon Bernard is executed while cheerleading for women to take the State Department and massacre Middle Eastern women and children. You know, one side of its brutality is in the abstract, but a spectacle is generated at this easier to relate to kind of narrative.
Or while voting in fucking Kamala Harris, who, like,
yeah, exactly, there you go.
Yeah. Keep people on death row that were meant to be released and keep people having longer fucking sentences. Like, there's no coherence and there's no consistency to their ideology.
Yeah, fundamentally, yeah. The liberal frame is totally cynical and really has nothing. Like, yeah, I totally agree. There is a massive double standard of being opposed to the death penalty, but being pro kind of foreign intervention and just endless kind of regime change wars. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know. I just I'm too squeamish for all of this.
I'm just old lib views that haven't changed. I've softened on guns and like all this other shit, but definitely I don't think it's the state's place to do
thank you
shit.
Yeah, I
don't think
I agree with that.
No, I agree as well. I don't like the death penalty.
You're not God. You're not infallible. You can't decide some shit like that. And again, yeah, if you really want to punish a motherfucker, I totally agree. I think life in prison is way worse. I just don't think I philosophically don't think it's the state's place to do something that crazy, to do something that permanent.
I think it's incentive more to keep people in jail for life. If you're a private prisoner, right, if you're a DA that is lobbied by and for these private prison like PACs, sure, and shit.
Of course,
you know?
But the only alternative shouldn't be putting them to death without their will or I don't know.
Sure, but that highlights just like how the system in itself is inherently contradictory, and that there's just these inherent contradictions that we're not going to be able to consolidate or just like get over without actually taking a holistic approach to it. Like, if you take away the death penalty, then it's just going to be like a better racket for these private prisons to be able to make money off of having people in jail. Mm-hmm. And then the argument's the other way around. It's just like an austerity measure, right? So that's not a good argument for it either. But like, this whole thing highlights that these are institutional problems that are inherent within the class system, within capitalism, and within the bourgeois state. It's not something that you can just take away as an individual aspect.
Yeah, I mean, the state doles out violence, right? And so I think like just being like, well, like, you know, I think that it's kind of wacky to just be like, well, I don't think it's their place to
it's fairy tale shit.
Exactly, because it's like, no, man, like that's how this shit works. Again,
they kill people every day.
No, and literally, like the state would have to do that, right? Like, if you're the person walking into the room being like, I'm the big dog in here, like I'm the one in charge, people are going, another monkey is going to come up and try to bash you with a rock, and you're going to bash him with a fucking rock. Like, I think there is something to be said there, right? They dole out violence, right? I think that it's more honest. Like, we've talked about like acute authority versus kind of like a subverted authority in like the U.S. versus China, and like I respect and I appreciate honest authority a little bit more. And again, I'll harp on it again. Like, I think the framing of this issue is fucking stupid because it literally does come down to just like government dysfunction and inefficiency of just like, well, these guys couldn't be elected dog catcher. They're just going to fuck this up, so we can't allow that to happen. And it's like, no, dude, again, just like that's the wrong framing. Like, whatever you assign to the government, there's going to be examples of them fucking it up. You're just putting this huge fucking this huge spotlight on it.
Yep, microscope shit. Tunnel vision shit.
Yeah, and the actual issue is the steps that got that guy to be in that predicament in the first place, which is I don't know where this guy came from or anything like that, but you know, the incentives of the cops, whatever the fuck this guy is, you know, if this guy was in dire straits financially, a poorly incentivized prison system with privatization, a fucking court system that just lubed up, just shits people out the other end as quickly as they can. No for plea deal, like,
yep. like and an education system that fucking puts people directly into jail by getting them used to dealing with police officers in their school every fucking yep. day when they live in the inner city, or having people yep. rifle through their belongings every day they enter a school. It's prison, like school to prison pipeline shit. Literally our entire system is set up in order to be able to buffer like and put people in jail and make profit off these people, because they can then use their profit or their labor power with like minimal compensation. And so like the whole thing is like looking at just individually the abolition of the death penalty is disingenuous in a fucking bourgeois
government. Yeah, yeah. And I'm definitely not making the argument that all we should do is just abolish the death penalty. I do think we can all agree that like what needs to be done is a kind of massive kind of institutional change in the way that, I mean, even society is organized on the fundamental level of wage relationships and relationships of the state to the individual. I mean, I think a massive overhaul needs to be done, real kind of like, you know, a real kind of, you know, a populist kind of, I don't know, change to the way things are. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you guys. Like a lot of this has to do with, you know, state power. And I do agree with Slav to some extent, like it is way more, you know, not heartening, but at least honest to have the state operate transparently rather than on all of the mystification and kind of creepy surveillance.
Psychopolitics,
right,
baby.
Psychopolitics, right? The commodification of affects. We're talking Byung-Chul Han here.
Yes, but, indeed.
Yeah. Good, yeah. Interesting. Interesting take. Yeah,
I mean, I don't really care about the, I mean, I don't talk about it. I'm not advocating like, hey, we need to abolish this shit. Like, I don't care. I mean, again, yeah it's what you said. Microscopic.
Well,
it's like
we're nibbling
around the edges of some real problem. Like, why aren't we talking about why these motherfuckers
exactly.
are in
prison? When I think people are just for some reason people can't fucking learn that when mainstream media news sources are telling you to be outraged about one microcosmic injustice, it's not because they want the people to rise up and overthrow the machine. It's to divert their attention away from the way this machine actually functions. That's right. Why, like, I mean, you know, it's I don't know why it's controversial to say, but in a country with this many people and this much fucking gun violence, 900 police deaths every year isn't a huge number, but so much, I mean, it's bad that it fucking happens, but when there's so much attention directed to it in terms of justice narratives, it's because it's serving a function for the state, not against the state.
Yeah, and the service is probably keeping people locked up for their entire fucking lives so that you can have them go fight forest fires for you.
Exactly.
Or fill these motherfucking prisons. I mean, and again, I don't want to get into the mud on their terms where I go like, I'm going to frame this as just like, ultimately, I want to chew into their bottom line. Like, I don't want to frame it that way. I mean, like, I mean, again, personally, I do just kind of have like a very pragmatic and maybe kind of brutal look at it, which is just like the state doles out violence. And like, I don't want to have any fucking illusions about that.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, they are, I don't know. I guess I'm just saying also just that, like, I don't necessarily, if somebody's doing the right thing for the wrong reasons as a politician, I don't necessarily want to criticize them for that.
We should take every opportunity that we have, like, as dissidents, is to be able to expose like the injustices of the state and the inherent violence within the state. So doing something like about abolishing the death penalty only further covers that up, and only gives like a way, it's just like a band-aid. It's just like this NGO shit. Like, at the end of the day, nothing's actually materially changing for the prisoners or for the working class. Like, this is just a thin issue that
of course. And that's why I never pushed for abolishing the death penalty. But also the thing is, like, am I supposed to go around and be like, oh yeah, the death penalty is actually good? Am I supposed to do that?
Exactly. No. You should use the instances of it being a bad thing to say, hey, well, this is actually inherent within the system as a whole.
Yeah,
like, this is how the state operates. We can use it as a way to expose the violence of the state naturally. And like, that's where the utility of this argument is for us as dissidents is, and it's not in like, oh yeah, we should take a side here. It's saying, hey, A, look at how this is going to be a like a diversion to where you're not actually focusing your attention on the things that actually matter. And B, don't you see that this is how the state operates? This is inherent in the state's day-to-day fucking activities. Yeah. So like, them doing this is no different. It's just in our face and it's obvious. It's even just honest.
Guys, this is making me really squeamish. Can we just go back to talking about trans stuff? No, but yeah, I agree with everything that's been said. It's just, for me, like, there's something just so viscerally sickening about the state to death. Like, I just, I, like, personally, that's just where I'm at. Like, I'm just, I'm still recovering from just, like, thinking about somebody getting fucking injected or electrocuted. Like, ugh, I don't know.
I mean, look, things come back in the news and they cycle in because they're, it's all, you know, I sound crazy when I say this shit, but I really feel like they fucking, you know, they very deliberately handpicked these types of stories and pumped them up in the news because, like, you know, within, whatever else is going on, I really feel that way. Because, I mean, you know, police kill, like, unarmed black people, like, that shit happens. But, you know, the time we hear the biggest fuss about it is political.
Yeah,
it's political. Me too. Yeah. Sexual assault happens all the time. But when do you hear about it? When it's used politically. So it's like, you know, the, you know, it's the same thing with COVID and climate change and all these things happen, right? But they cherry pick and these things come back in the narrative and back in the discourse and back trending and all this because it's deliberate distraction. That's all it is.
Yeah.
It's to distract you from what's actually going on, what actually matters, what's actually impacting you. And people get into these fucking fights and arguments about the shit. And then, you know, you get to the end of it and what? Neither side wins, right? That's for sure. No, neither side really wins. It just seesaws back and forth, getting leverage in whatever culture war. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you say you do get some victory. It's nothing. Right.
Absolutely. I mean, my final point about this, I guess, is just going to be that I think a lot of leftists have a tendency to want to kind of replace organic kind of familial units, organic kind of community structures with state operations, whether it be carceral or therapeutic. And I think all of that shit is just super bogus. It's super individualizing. It's depoliticizing. And it's destroying real kind of authentic communitarian bonds that precede the economic order. I think the family unit is the first unit of social production. And I do think that the carceral state and the therapeutic state fuck with that. This is one of the things I love about Lash. He talks about this all the fucking time. So I'll just say, it's insane to me how much, I guess the left, the contemporary left is like, oh, you know, we're just going to replace the carceral state with a benevolent therapeutic state that's going to, you know, go into families. We're going to break up, you know, families. We're going to put, social workers surveilling, you know, people's private lives.
Yeah, like, that should be like equilibrium, and they give you that drug every day that makes you numb out. Like,
exactly. And the therapeutic state is inherently, it's therapy. It's not psychoanalysis. They don't want deep criticism. They don't want deep self-understanding. They just want to minimize the anxiety and alienation that you feel to keep the system going.
It's medication for the sake of productivity. They want you to be a productive worker.
100%. It's not about healing. It's not about transcendence. It's not about self-awareness. It's about conformity.
Yeah, it's pure maintenance.
Last point, and just to finish up, my last point, I'll run down an old hit. My post-cancellation essay, I wrote that the culture war is the illusion of politics. And these niche issues, when they take the foreground, are used as they create this idea that there's some meaningful political exchange happening. And with that, the state is able to divert enough attention away to do the real kind of to do the real politics, so to speak, which is austerity and inequality and other whatever bourgeois. I'm kind of stoned right now. I lost my train of thought. But you guys get the idea, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And that's why I try to avoid talking about it. And I try to, like, I mean, I guess you have to talk about it, right? You have to. But, like, you know, I think we take the bait a little bit too much. I think they throw out bait and everybody just like chum in the water just circles around. It's like, oh, well, let me tell you something about this. And well, actually, if you read this, like, yo, just relax. Like, yo, why do we have to take the bait? Do we have to? We don't have to. I mean, I know it's fun sometimes or whatever, but, like, I don't know, especially, like, when you've been thinking about, I've been thinking about politics for, like, over a decade, and it's the same shit every time.
Yeah.
Every time these things come up, you know the arguments. Everybody says this. I feel tired saying the same shit of, like, oh, the state shouldn't do this. Like, I'm bored hearing myself say that, because it's like, yo, we all say the same shit over and over. It's like, you know what I mean? It's like, yo, you're never changing anybody's mind.
It's a podcast, baby.
No. Well, yeah, sure, okay, yeah.
We're doing the fucking work.
Sure, I get that, but I mean, like, well, you know, there's there's utility in reminding people of what matter or what's directly affecting them, because every day you're being distracted to not think about it. So being reminded of it, there is utility in that. But the whole staking out a side and this and the culture war shit, I mean, again, like, it's what I keep telling people. It's like, yo, there is no winning it. There is no winning it. I don't care what type of tribute they give you. I don't care what fucking, you know, bill gets passed or you know, who owned who online. Like, you're not winning it. It's never going to end. It is the unending war. You know what I mean? It's the never ending war.
Yeah, I mean, in my mind, it's a balance, right? Culture war shit. It's a balance between realizing, like, and we had mentioned earlier, like, a lot of these cultural issues is it's a form of class war, right? It does exist, like, in some real capacity, right? And I think that we totally write it off at our own peril to an extent. Yeah. Having said that, it's junk food most of the time, right? Like, it's the case with any kind of generalization.
Check those nutrition facts, bro. Like, your culture war issues are all just manifestations of a material reason or material cause, right? So check that fucking.
Exactly. COH, has this issue, was this issue grown locally? For me, right? And so you're looking at it, right? You're looking at the nutritional facts, right? Is this just full of fucking corn syrup, right? Is this just, I don't know. I'm going to go down this metaphor too much. Totally lose my
I'm a little skeptical of when they tell it. I mean, we should examine this stuff just because it's important to examine how ideology is manufactured. And that's one of the main ways that it happens. Yeah.
Well, let me finish my point here, which is also just that, you know, as we had said earlier, just talking about even values, right? So, like, values are a thing that are very clearly, like, subject to these forces that are forming it in these arenas, right? Mm-hmm. Well, like, it's important to have a clear understanding of what your fucking values are and what you give a shit about, because, like, that contextualizes everything you fucking do in the world, because you know, like, what your stakes are. You have personal stakes, right? If your only personal stakes are your fucking polycule or something like that, you know what I mean? Like, well, you didn't know what that was 9 months ago, right? And this gets to my main point, which is, and we were talking about ideology earlier, and just like having a philosophy and things like that. If I can recommend any one thing to listeners of the show or whatever, it's like, figure out the best way for yourself. I don't know what the best way is for yourself. I know what the best way is for me. The best way to get off the roller coaster, the pendulum of riding every fucking psyop that every headline news article wants you to be on, right? Yeah. How do you get to a point where news headlines aren't making you adopt brand new, completely different positions on every issue every week?
Exactly.
Right? Exactly. How do you get off the wild ride, right?
Right.
What that looks like, and Gmork talks about this quite a bit, and I think he has a pretty good take on it, which is figure out what your fucking principles are, all right? Mm-hmm. And I think that for a lot of people, I think that reading some theory and adopting a coherent ideology is a good part about that. Obviously, you don't want to get to the point where the tail's wagging the dog, right? Yeah. But I do think that this stuff does matter because values are the bedrock that informs what the fuck it informs fucking everything. You know what I mean? If I had completely bought into hating my family, being completely atomized, not giving a shit about being disempowered as a worker, all of this shit, I wouldn't give a fuck about the fact that my state is making me stay inside all year. Right.
And fundamentally what these discursive frames do and what these discursive issues do is force you to care about this abstract spectral force that has no valence over your life, and basically tell you that the things that are important to you locally, the things that are important to you in your personal life and your political and economic existence, are not important to you, and that you should adopt these abstract kind of bullshit culture war things instead. Because at the end of the day, what those bullshit culture war kind of abstract ideals and forces represent are interests that are often in opposition to your own. They're interests of these political powers that you can't comprehend or understand because they're so large and powerful. So at the end of the day, you should care about you and your own material interests and the material interests interests of your coworkers and the people in your community. That's my pitch. Just to add
on. I just want to reify here. Slav just said read theory, everybody. So yeah.
Oh, that's two L's. That's two tallies for COH.
Oh man. Let's go, baby. And
Slav, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I felt bad after I slipped somebody some money to sick a dog on him the other day. Maybe I should soften up on the guy.
Oh, that was you sick bastard. That's what all this posturing about anti-pit bulls is. Is that way you can go in and slip it in the back and just support them? Use them as your henchmen.
I was giving a little mutual aid to some dog fighters.
A little mutual aid to some rabid dogs and like recently pregnant pit bulls.
Exactly. You,
Michael Vick, baby.
Bro, I felt like Michael Vick yesterday. I swear to God, I was about to grab a wrench.
Michael Vick was the best. I remember when he got like questioned by the press after that happened and he was just like, man, I'm fucking Michael Vick. People gonna love me no matter what the fuck I do.
And then it was like 3 months later.
yeah, exactly. All right, guys, I got many distractions in the background. You think we got enough here?
I think we're good. I think this was great. Right. Thanks for coming on, guys.
This ruled. Thanks for coming on our show.
This is a blast.
All right, guys, perfect. Looking forward to hearing these two episodes cut both ways, so to speak. So I'll talk to you all later.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, take care, man.
All right, see you guys.
Make sure to remember to leave your browser.